From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on This Day in Maine, Thursday, September 14th, 2017. And on this day, Portland fishermen say growing tourism is making their livelihood difficult, and they're petitioning the city to do something about it. And an art project that looks at the stories and faces of people who work at Bath Iron Works. That's all ahead in just a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
The deadline to apply for funding through the Land for Maine's Future program is tomorrow, and about three dozen projects are expected to compete for roughly $3.2 million from the state conservation program. One of those is the project known as Big Six, an area of remote timberland tucked into the northwest corner of Somerset County. Steve Missler has more.
The Big Six project has come under scrutiny because, unlike most LMF projects, it's a working forest that's not easily accessible for recreation. Getting there and back often requires multiple border crossings through Canada, but over 4,500 acres of Big Six is a prized maple plantation that's said to account for up to a quarter of the state's maple syrup production. Tom Abello is with the Nature Conservancy, which supported Big Six's successful application for over $3.5 million in federal forest legacy funds.
There's a rather significant maple sugar operation. I think one of the things that makes it unique is that there's been strong support from the administration and strong support from the Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry.
And now, Big Six landowner Paul Fortin wants $1.2 million more from the Land for Maine's Future program. A longtime critic of the program, Governor Paul LePage, actually supports Fortin's application. And that's prompted some to question whether Big Six is benefiting from Fortin's past political contributions. Fortin has financially backed LePage's two bids for governor, and he contributed to a political action committee that LePage created to install lawmakers favorable to his policy agenda. Fortin has flatly denied those accusations, saying his pursuit of the easement is a business decision. Without it, he says, he'd have to cut the sugar bush and sell it for timber. And he's lined up an impressive list of supporters who say the easement will protect a key supplier to Maine's maple syrup production. But a report by Maine Public found that much of the syrup produced there is done by Canadian companies, and most of it is sold to wholesalers in New Hampshire and Vermont as a product of the U.S., not Maine. Nevertheless, Abello from the Nature Conservancy says the LMF board, each member appointed by the governor, will have a lot of latitude to score Big Six and the 38 other projects expected to apply for funds.
So it'll be really interesting to see how this board works together, how it scores those projects, and how it decides where to invest that money.
Abello says the proposals are diverse, from working waterfront and water access to recreational and forest land projects. The list of applicants is due Friday. The LMF board begins reviewing the applications on November 7th. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Lobstermen and other marine businesses that depend on Portland's ever more bustling waterfront are reaching the boiling point over dwindling parking and rising traffic. Now they're petitioning the city to do something about it. Fred Bever has more.
Keith Lane has been lobstering out of the port of Portland since 1960. Now he docks his boat, the Kestrel, at Customs House Wharf, also the home to several other marine-related businesses and a handful of popular restaurants. As Portland's tourism and development economies have heated up over the last decade, he's found it more difficult to maneuver off and on the water.
They keep allowing non-marine development further and further down the wharfs, and you can't tie up next to a condominium. A lobster boat just can't do it. And you can't tie up next to a restaurant.
Zoning rules adopted a decade ago after similar controversy aimed to balance tourism and other non-marine uses with maintaining a robust working waterfront. Non-marine uses and related parking are, with a few exceptions, barred beyond 150 feet out on the piers. But now several new hotel and office projects are being proposed, almost simultaneously, for Commercial Street, which serves the wharves. That includes a hotel right on a wharf that would require rezoning. More than 90 lobstermen and fishermen, including Lane, have responded with a petition calling for a halt to construction of any new offices, condominiums, or hotels on the wharf side of the street.
We hear what the lobstermen are saying.
The city's waterfront coordinator, William Needleman, acknowledges that rapid development has put the pressure on.
The street has seen a great deal of growth in terms of traffic of all types. We see more bait trucks. We see more pedestrians than we used to, and there's more just passenger traffic.
Needleman says that's why the city is working on a parking study and has applied for funding for a full-scale traffic corridor assessment that takes all the competing uses into account. And he argues that striking a balance is essential to the survival of the aging piers themselves, whose owners need revenues from non-marine uses for repair and maintenance. Lobsterman Keith Lane says he understands the issue, acknowledging that he pays a relatively modest $400 a month in dock fees. But he also says city officials aren't giving enough consideration to the needs of a long-established industry.
Their eyes glitter when they see a cruise ship come in and the street full of tourists. They're rubbing their hands. Wow, what prosperity. They're driving a 300-400-year-old business right out of the town.
City officials say they will consider the petition when they take up the next round of commercial street proposals. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
And finally today, at 11:30 every workday, the lunch whistle blows at Bath Iron Works. And ship fitters, welders, pipe fitters, electricians, and painters gather in at the yard's south gate for a strict 30-minute lunch break. But many Bath residents know very little about these people or about the dangerous work they do. Two Bath locals, Hopper McDonough and Heather Perry, decided to ask them and record their answers and take their portraits. The result is an exhibition called Southgate Faces. Keith Shortall spoke with the creators about what the project revealed.
I think the very first time I drove by that gate and saw the workers out there, I knew there was something that should be captured. And after driving by for years and years, and after meeting Heather, I said, let's do this. Let's take these portraits. And she said, yeah, I've thought the same thing.
But then it's how to do it. And I knew right away that I wanted to do studio portraits, and that was going to involve a studio. So
this studio is only 2 or 3 blocks from the yard. We thought, well, we'll do it here.
Except that we also knew there was no way we would get them to come up here. So
it turns out they have basically 30 minutes, from the time they hit the gate to the time they get back in, they have 30 minutes for lunch.
We knew we had to bring the studio to them. So we did. We built a studio out of PVC and shade fabric, and we made it something that could break down and collapse onto the top and inside of Hopper's minivan. And we drove it down there. And we basically set up an alien spaceship in the middle of their living room.
My name is Dan Willett, and I am a pipe fitter at Bath Iron Works for 27 years this week. Just doing the pipe fitting, it wears out your elbows and your knees and your joints in your body, and it's time for me to retire in 3 more years.
Very crowded with lots of people, dirty, smoky, dusty, lots of grit and toxic.
Trash, mud, dirt. Trade debris.
It's just hot, miserable. You got a respirator on, hard hat, face shield, safety glasses fogging up. Can't see. Clothes get drenched in sweat.
When I first started here, it was definitely very intimidating. I definitely was very scared. You know, melting point of steel is 2,700 degrees. And I definitely watch out every day for something to go wrong, because definitely something could go wrong.
Scary as hell.
This is not a place to work if you're at all claustrophobic.
Not at all. That was one of the themes that came out as well, is that they work in tight spaces.
The welders will say, I'm hanging upside down. I'm in a tiny little, like I'm in the trunk of my car. It's that size.
Picture trying to fit where your spare tire goes in the back of your van.
I mean, there's some places where I'm crawling where I'm not always sure I'm going to be able to get out, or if I am by myself, no one's going to find me for a while.
So I'm the smallest guy on the crew, so that's where I get put in the tight spots.
One thing that really got us was how much they liked the job.
Yeah, they all love the job.
That's one thing that really surprised us. These jobs that they describe as dusty and dirty and gritty
and loud
and dangerous, almost to a builder, they loved it.
Pretty amazing feeling knowing that parts of you have literally gone into that, watching it sail down the river.
It's just impressive to see something that they said couldn't be built and go down the river.
Oh my God, I cried. I cried because it is the first ship I start on when I begin at Bath Ironworks. And to see it sail down the river, tears came to my eyes.
I just like working with steel and working on big things, thick metal, heavy structural work. It's just, it's a manly job and I like it.
I like that I'm part of something that's bigger than me, bigger than all of us, and put together we're doing something really, really cool here.
What this really was is an exercise in listening to one another. I have lived here two blocks up from the yard for 18 years, and I hear the horn, you know, five times a day or whatever it is. I know that I can't leave my house at 3:30 because I can't get anywhere when the yard lets out. I know that when I run on Washington Street, it, you know, I feel a little uncomfortable if I go by at 11:30 when they're all out for lunch. But there's this huge workforce, and we're not mixing. Like, the community of Bath is not mixing with this community that comes in to work. And who are they? And what are their hopes and dreams? And what do they want from a day of work? And all of a sudden now, I feel like we've opened a window between these two communities. And it's nothing more than that. It's nothing more than that. We've listened to 65 people that are do something different than what we do. But I feel like... It feels a little different.
There's more on the project at mainepublic.org. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, September 14th, 2017. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.